Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Did you buy a MacBook Air this morning?
I didn't. I did not. I covered the microphones of my M1 MacBook Air and said, shh, it's okay.
You're still for sale. It's okay. You're still current.
You're still good.
It doesn't matter. No, there's a new baby in the family.
That's right. That's right. No jealousy.
You're not leaving the family yet.
Yes. You've got a couple good years left in you.
I think it's funny that, all the reports, Marco tweeted about it, and I put it in a little post on Six Colors, but it sounds like they basically built a lot of the standard configs, and so those are available shipping next Friday. And then if you customize, most of our listeners probably do, then it's early August, maybe late July. And that's not an unusual way for Apple to launch any product, right, is they pre-build a lot of them. The difference is that this one has more... it's just more visible that these complications are happening because this product is in the teeth of the supply chain crisis.
Right. And if you need to pre-build a lot of things, you don't necessarily want to overcommit to configurations that you don't think you can sell or that, might be more, I assume the base model being the least expensive is also probably the best seller overall, yeah, right? Maybe not for people like us, but, generally speaking.
I think so. I think that they configure that in a way that's what people buy. They just buy it straight up. I'd been thinking for a while because I was looking at what my existing M1 Air configuration is, and I had been thinking for a while now that I just got the base model. I did not just get the base model. Mm. I got the 7 GPU M1 Air. I got the low GPU configuration that they made, but I still increased the RAM and the storage on it. And it was funny because I was looking at the M2 order page, and I was thinking, well, what am I going to order here? Am I going to order more RAM? I'm like, yeah, I probably should. And more storage? Yeah, I probably should go up to 512 there. And then I went and checked what my M1 Air was, and it's the exact same specs. I'm consistent. I'll give that to myself. I'm consistent.
Yeah, I think that's very similar to what I did at the time. I definitely added more RAM. I may or may not have upgraded the storage. I know a lot of people keep talking about you got to upgrade the storage. My laptop is like a satellite computer.
Yeah.
It has almost everything stored in the cloud. There's almost nothing on it locally. So I just need enough kind of scratch disk space to work with stuff that I download or have, logic projects or whatever. But I just don't, I view it as a machine that if it is lost, I should just be able to grab a new MacBook. Essentially
rip the next one off the roll.
Yeah, exactly. Because I just don't, I mean, especially always been a challenge for anybody using a multi-Mac lifestyle, right? It's like, well, you don't want to end up in a situation where some files are here and some files are there.
Right.
That's a pain. So for me, the iMac is the home base still, and the MacBook Air is a satellite, but it works pretty well for that. It's also, I set that one up fresh, and it was also, between that and the M1 speeds, that thing it really works nicely. Whereas my, 5-year-old iMac that has probably been migrated from a 2011 iMac, it has tons of stuff on it that's just like detritus from applications installed while working at Macworld or things I reviewed or things I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. I'll take a look at it. It's just full of crap.
Yeah, I think 256, I'm looking at this M1 MacBook Air that I'm on right now, 256 is a little bit light. Even here on this one, it would be right on the edge if I was at 256 because, I'm recording audio files or editing audio and stuff like that. And you do need to have enough space to deal with some large files. So the 512 is my rationale there. Anyway, I did buy one, for the great, roll down of hardware in our house. It's shipping again in early August, so we'll see. Of course, a bunch of people were asking about what does it mean? The story of the supply chain difficulties and all that put everybody kind of on edge and not thinking the normal way they do. And so I definitely saw people saying, well, wait a second. Is it unusual that Apple, puts the sales up before the reviews go out? And the answer is no. Apple very cleverly has the excited pre-orders happen before the reviews go out.
They're going to buy it either way.
The reviews tend to go out right before the ship date because that's the moment that they time it. And it's been like that for a long time. So, by normal standards, we could expect since the ship date is next week that the reviews would drop at some point next week. And if you're asking Jason, do you have one in front of you right now? The answer is no. I have not touched one since WWDC. But next week, I would expect reviews. So that's where we are. And I think that's very clever on Apple's part to say, hey, all you've heard is our PR. Why don't you buy one?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's smart, right? Like I said, those people are going to buy it anyways. Those are the people who have been waiting and they've already devoured all the specs and they've thought about all the trade-offs. And
you know, if the reviews are terrible or something comes up or whatever, you get that period to return it anyway. So it's really not.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, it's really not.
And especially with the supply chain stuff, you know, so many of those people are people who do want to just like, oh, I need to order right away. Like, you know, when the store comes back up, I got to have my order in.
Yeah. And then you can cancel it if you need to or whatever.
Exactly.
As necessary. Yeah. So anyway, that's always an exciting day for in Apple product culture of ordering a new thing. And this is the product people are actually excited about. I'll note that I didn't notice quite as much of this when the MacBook Pro went on sale a few weeks ago. It's just less enthusiasm for that product than there is for this product. Officials and all, I will say I got it in midnight. Because that one looked cool when I saw it in person. That's it.
It's you have one of those half and half cables then.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that going around with the black. It's got a midnight MagSafe connector, but a white USB-C connector on the other end.
As somebody who has bought black third party cables and plugged them into white Apple power adapters, I don't understand what they.
I mean,
are
I understand, but I laugh at it, but.
I think it's that's you know it's to keep the it's to tell you which end is which or something.
Right. I do stand by my comment too. I think because Jeremy Burge pointed this out on Twitter the other day, and I stand by my comment that if Johnny was still there, it would be a gradient going from black to white, like down
idea.
The cable.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
it would be really nice. So
beautiful, alas. Beautiful. So the other big news is OS stuff, right? I mean, we got a beta 3. Of all the new OSs, and certainly the speculation is that this is probably, since Apple said the public beta was coming this month, that this is
July.
We are probably in public beta season, and usually what they do is they release the developer beta and then they wait a little bit to make sure that it doesn't explode. There isn't some sort of like killer bug that they need to fix before they loose it on the public. But beta 3, it definitely has that feel for me like that this is probably the one that they're going to go out with. And that might be next week too. Who knows? They've got the whole month.
It's often mid-July that tends to be about roughly a month or so after WWDC, I think, is pretty solid timing if you look historically.
Yeah, and the week after this beta, so that would be next week. So it may be coming as well. I'll also say, for if you're out there playing the game of like, well, do they know more than they say? Honestly, I've been told public beta dates before and have gotten to the morning of that date and had Apple say, nope. This is not unlike, I'll tell you the inside baseball here, unlike product embargoes where Apple says, you can write about it and it's 6 a.m. on such a day, you can post your story. When they do the things about public betas and they're like trying to give you the heads up about when you can, you know, it's not quite an embargo, but it's like to time it with the release of the public beta. It doesn't work like that. They're like, we're shooting for this day. We'll see. And I've absolutely had that moment happen where I'm ready to go with my public beta something or other, and somebody from Apple PR basically waves me off and is like, nope, not today. And I assume what that means is that something happened and they're going to do a new build because they found something that they're not comfortable releasing to the public.
Right.
I don't know, but that's my assumption. So I'd say it's coming soon, probably, but nobody really knows, because until the moment where they push the button and get it out there, anything could happen to stop the process. It's not a precise, you know, scientific kind of thing like an embargo drop is.
Right, exactly. I mean, hardware, it's got a hard, fast date because they got to move physical items, moving bits. Yeah, that can happen in a different schedule if you need to.
Yeah.
But it is also, I think, interesting because, you know, while we've had plenty of people been like talking about their various impressions of the developer betas and posting stuff on Twitter, etc., you know, I think the public beta kind of opens the floodgates. And not only do you get more content from people who have been living with it for a little while, but a lot more people are looking at it, which means a lot more things potentially get sort of if not unearthed, because a lot of this stuff is known, like people find interesting things or do clever stuff or whatever. So I'm kind of intrigued to see once it's into the hands of the public, what people will do with it. Plus, I think you start to ramp up a lot on the beta testing of third-party apps that are starting to take advantage of things right. that are new in these new software updates, which is something I'm looking forward to a lot.
Yeah, and they can do that now. There was a period of time where they couldn't distribute using test flight. Right. They couldn't distribute stuff that was built for the betas, and don't believe that's true anymore. So that's a help for everybody out there who's trying out the betas to try out beta on beta. Although sometimes that can fix bugs and stuff too that crop up where you're using your beta and this app that you really like. I mean, it's a thing, right? Like there are going to be quirks. I noticed in developer beta 3 of iPadOS, which I installed on my main iPad because the time had come, like it was time to do it. Many apps, if you start you bring up the software keyboard to type and it covers up the text entry, and the only way to fix it is to quit the app and reopen it, and then it works for a little while and then it breaks again, and it's super annoying. And it's just like, you know, again, don't bring this upon yourself unless there is something that you're super excited about trying out, because Stage Manager might be that thing. Stage Manager is really interesting, but just be aware that your apps may break, and also like there will be super weird bugs.
There's going to be stuff that's not ready for it, right? Like it's Apple's done a pretty good job of saying like, hey, if you have followed sort of our guidelines to this point, you know, support is going to be pretty good for Stage Manager without you doing anything at all. But there's always edge cases. There's always weird decisions. You know, there's always things like, you know, apps that have custom keyboards, for example. Stuff gets kind of wonky. You know, I think about like the New York Times crossword app, which has its own little custom keyboard. And it's like, I don't think that's going to play well with Stage Manager immediately out of the box.
Although,
as it were.
I don't know. Maybe the custom keyboards will work and it's the stock keyboards that have the bug in it. It's hard.
You never know with these things.
It's hard to say. But portion of the podcast where we do that thing where we warn you and say, the standard line is like, oh, don't install a beta. It's like, we're not telling you not to install a beta. We're telling you that if you're going to go on the beta train, do it with your eyes wide open and think about the fact that you're kind of committing to spending the summer, especially if it's an iOS device, right? On a Mac, you can put it on a separate partition or whatever, but on an iOS device, you're kind of committing to being on a little bit of a bumpy ride, and just, you know, be aware of that before you go in. It's not finished software. It's got bugs. I could tell you that iPad bug is super annoying, and like if that sounds bad to you, maybe wait and don't get. Assuming that the public beta is based on developer beta 3, don't maybe wait and see if that bug goes away. But there are going to be bugs, and that's just how it is. And so as long as you go in with your eyes open about what it is, then you can make your own decision about that, and that's just fine. I'm not going to tell you not to install the betas. I'm going to tell you to be smart and think about it before you commit, because unless you're like us and we kind of have to do it, because how do you write about something unless you use it? So here we are. Like,
sometimes you got to take the dive in, and it's a little scary, but you know, like you said, something that we do so that you don't have to.
Yeah,
you can if you want, but if you don't want to, we'll tell you.
Just read about
I had this conversation with John Maltz over on The Rebound the other week, because he was like, John was seriously considering buying an iPad because none of his iPads work with Stage Manager. And he's like, well, but I know if I buy an iPad Pro now and they're going to release this one in the fall that's better. And I'm like, John, it's on beta anyways. Why don't I just wait and see what people say about it and then decide if you need to buy a new iPad when the new iPads come out? You can worry about it later. And he's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I could do that.
What if I just bought one now, sight unseen, and just was like,
and installed the beta on it and just did that? What if I did that? The pace of change, you know, last year the Safari stuff changed a lot. The pace of change in Stage Manager on the iPad this year is breathtaking. There have been huge changes every single beta thus far. I wonder if they're trying to hit a target and like in beta 3 they're like, okay, we got there, or if they're just still going down the punch list, because they've addressed a lot of my bigger complaints about it in terms of making a much clearer interface for how you, whether it's a keyboard or whether you're using the screen to move stuff around, right? They've got that drop down menu that gives you your multitasking options now instead of the kind of very small and obscure set of icons. And Command W closes a window now. And like, I think they've still got more work to do, but they're much further along than they were in beta one. And I think that's a great sign that they're still making visible progress on that feature.
In some ways, beta one felt like, you know, sometimes you get betas that come out from Apple and the first one feels like, you know, it's pretty much there. There's some tweaks and there's some changes and stuff like that. But, you know, it's pretty, the whole thing is sketched out. Whereas beta one of a lot of these this time around felt very much like
we have
it's not all there yet.
But we're not there yet.
We're shipping this and it's not finished. Like, you know, John Gruber was given Craig Federighi a hard time at the talk show at WWDC about the trackpad preferences in macOS because they've redesigned the entire system settings. And there was they lost those little video demos. And in the most recent beta, apparently there are demonstrations again. They've sort of continued to work on that. And there was a splash screen added for Stage Manager to, you know, walk you into, hey, this is Stage Manager. Here's how it works and what it's good for, right? Rather than just dumping you in the deep end, being like, all your windows look weird now. Enjoy, you know? So, you know, some of it's about smoothing over those edges and about making the onboarding experiences for these things as smooth as possible. And it starts to feel like maybe it's shaping up and now we're at the point where it's like, all right, now we're tweaking, continuing to tweak our behavior and get it to the point where it's polished enough that it will be the shipping version.
Right. If it was ever the case that Apple intended the developer beta at WWDC to be more or less what you were going to get in the fall, less, you know, other than bugs. And I'm not sure it ever was. But if it was, it's not now, because what you said, Federighi was like, oh yeah, we're working on something there. Like, they released, and also keep in mind that these builds lag behind by a few weeks what's being worked on inside Apple. So, like, when Federighi said that, like, they were already working on or had done the replacement for it. But the point was it wasn't in the developer preview number one.
Exactly.
Because they had to go final on that in, you know, maybe May sometime. And so they weren't done. But they needed to get it out, because what would a WWDC be without a developer beta drop, right? People would scream bloody murder if that happened. Yeah. So they dropped it.
Well, and
it
you need your developers something, they need something to work on, right? They need to know what the lay of the land is for the stuff that they're working on.
So anything else going on?
Well, you did write that piece that we should maybe talk really quickly about, the lockdown mode.
Oh yeah, that was this week. That was this week. I was sitting at the airport and I was like, "Oh, lockdown mode, hey." I better write about that. I think there were some pre-briefings on that I did not get, but I think it's a really cool idea, right? Because there's a lot of bad publicity for Apple when the iPhone gets hacked by state actors or by mercenary groups acting for different governments to spy on high-profile people in other governments or dissidents or whatever. And it's bad for Apple because it makes the iPhone look insecure. And even though none of us are probably being hacked by state actors, right? But still. And so, you know, the trade-off there is, well, we can shut off a whole bunch of this stuff, but it's going to be crappy. Like, you're gonna lose all these features that are really nice if we reduce the attack surfaces. And so, yeah, lockdown mode, which basically says, you know who you are. If you're being, you probably know that you might be attacked by one of these state actors, and you may have even been contacted by an intelligence official of some sort to say, you better watch out. We've detected strange activity. And so you can turn that feature on, and it's in all of the new OSs starting this fall. Interesting that it was announced separate from WWDC. I also find that fascinating. And basically, your iPhone experience degrades, but is way more secure.
Yeah, I think it's very smart, like you said. It's smart to have that option. It's not an option that most people are going to want because of the fact that it disables so many features that people find useful. And that's always the balance with security, right? Security versus convenience. You know, stuff that makes it really easy to do certain things oftentimes means that there's a possibility to be exploited. This has come up a little bit. One of the features that Apple built in iOS 16 is, as we've seen them for years, add these new privacy restrictions, right, where you have to give permission to all these things. Do you want this app to use your camera? Do you want this app to use your microphone? And now there is one in iOS 16 that's for the clipboard too, essentially. Do you want this app to be able to paste in this other app? And all those things are great because they provide transparency, but they're also annoying, right? Like, oh, I gotta hit like four different OK dialogue boxes before I can use this app. And so if you want to add more of that to your life, to have that trade-off of like, all right, I want this the system to really be aggressive about making sure that nothing's happening that is going to, you know, impinge on my security, you're gonna have to deal with some more frustration because things are gonna be less convenient.
Yeah, I mean, things like, you won't get incoming FaceTime messages if you haven't already initiated a conversation with them in the past, and it's not going to load a bunch of stuff in messages. And you know, when you lock your phone, all the wireless or like wired connections, or lock your Mac, whatever it is, like wired connections turn off automatically. Like they've got a checklist of all of the attack surfaces that they're like, well, there's a reason we do this. Really, what happened is they reach the point where. What do we do to decrease the attack surfaces? And there were a whole list of things that were like, oh, this really degrades the user experience. And so obviously they got the idea, well, we're going to need to create a mode that does this. And most people won't want to use it because it's awful. But if you're, you know, those people who are dissidents and members of governments that are being like, they need to use phones too. And the iPhone, while considered to be more secure than Android for general use, it's still got these issues where these groups like the NSO group that Apple's basically at war with exploit and then sell hacks to other state actors, basically. And so they decided this is the right approach, and I think it's cool. I think it's great. And almost nobody will ever use it, but like the people who use it know who they are.
Right. There's a few interesting things I noted from this. One thing that it does prevent is configuration profiles, or MDM, which is something that's actually, I had people complain in the past that the restricting profiles is not something you can do via the screen time thing either, I believe. I think this was a friend who's like, my kid's downloading profiles and installing them because they like promised to have like Minecraft mods or something. God only knows, right? But you couldn't lock that down. It just required the device's passcode. And if it's your kid's device, they have the passcode.
Right.
So interesting that it provides that. So that ability is clearly somewhere in the system. It's just not exposed in the screen time. This is also available on Ventura, which I thought was interesting. There's never really been, you know, obviously the Mac is much more permissible than iOS in general. So kind of intriguing to see that as an option there. But it, again, speaks to the fact that, as we talked about before, Apple's really leveled the playing field across all its devices, so it can roll out these features basically once across all of its platforms. And then the other thing which came up, suggested, I think, by our friend Anthony Johnston is this a peek at what Apple could do if they were forced to, say, forced to allow sideloading. Could they provide a mode, essentially, right, that locked down certain things or unlocked certain things? And I think that's it's a very broadly speaking question, but I think the answer is probably yes. I mean, it's not this exact thing, but like the idea of having a different mode you can switch the device into that restricts or allows certain types of actions certainly seems plausible, and certainly now seems more plausible based on this.
Yeah, I think, in fact, there is already another mode in iOS 16, which is developer mode, which is a similar kind of thing, which is you have to go into a developer mode in order to get a whole bunch of stuff to work, like test flight, I think. And like they're experimenting with this for sure, right? And while I don't know if I would look at lockdown mode as you know, proof of anything, I do think it's suggestive that with a developer mode and a lockdown mode and things like that, that Apple is recognizing that some security stuff needs to be user accessible, because not everybody wants it, but some people need it, whether it's to make it more secure or less secure. Is developer mode or is developer mode in Ventura?
I don't know. I don't know if it was on.
There is a new developer mode And now I can't remember where it is, but it's the same idea, right? The developer mode, like to do certain things, you got to turn it on. And that is something that I think people have been interested in for a while now, this ability to have, it's not really adding features so much as it is sort of like disabling a bunch of checks in certain areas. And like, I think that this may be the future for a bunch of stuff. And if Apple is forced to open up in certain ways, in fact, I mean, you don't really need to look at these new modes. You can look at the way Gatekeeper works on the Mac and see exactly sure. what Apple's approach is going to be, which is like, all right, first off, allow Macs, you know, only from the Mac App Store. And then there's allow Macs apps signed by authorized developers and the Mac App Store. And then you can get to the point where you're like, or you can just open it and we'll warn you, but you can go and open it anyway. And there's like the different layers of the onion
there. Yeah, it does make me wonder about, I mean, you know, and this is sort of getting into Apple's motivations, but it does make me wonder if Apple would tie a sideloading feature to disabling certain features as a deterrent in some cases. Be like, well, all right, we're going to let you install apps, but like for your security, we're not going to let this app run, or you have to enable these security features or something like that. I have no idea. But I mean, there's a lot of things they could do with it if they had to go that route. And one thinks, looking at the things they've done in other countries when they've been forced to, say, open up payment schemes or whatever, Apple and many corporations' very specific strategy is we do the least amount we have to in order to comply with the rules. So that will be the interesting the interesting idea if they have to do something like this.
So developer mode is a new mode in iOS 16 and watchOS 9 that enables common developer workflows disabled by default. So you have to enroll the device into developer mode. And what it does is it, with developer mode turned off, it is removing a bunch of developer features that are being used, again, for attacks. So that's what it's doing. Test flight does not require developer mode. That was a bug, right? I remember that now. That was a bug where they required it. That's not the idea. But it is one of those things where you're putting putting something from Xcode on and running it. I think there's like, you know, based on profiles and other stuff like that. So basically the idea here is only developers need these features. It's making our thing insecure. How do we handle that? And the answer is we're going to create a mode for that. And then so they've got multiple modes now to basically say, look, most people don't need this, but
There's a mode for that.
Positively and negatively, right? So they took a bunch of features out of the default for regular users because only developers needed them. They turned that on to be less secure so they can do their job. And then on the other end, you've got lockdown mode where you're turning it on to be even more secure on the spectrum of sort of like what's allowed on a device. Really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting move from Apple. I also thought, and as you mentioned there too, they also increased the payouts on their bug bounties. So that one for, I think it's for people who can present a bug that breaks through lockdown mode, it was like $2 million, yeah, which is super high.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is always that governments are going to pay NSO Group and stuff like that even more money to get these hacks, sure, presumably. But, and there's been a lot of criticism about Apple's bounties, but they're making an effort. I don't think I can judge how good the effort is, but they're making an effort and also donating money to, you know, foundations for cybersecurity and all of that. And I believe them. I think that there's some challenges maybe in Apple's corporate culture about what path they go down here. But, you know, Apple has taken an adversarial position to groups like the NSO Group, and that's a good place for them to be. Because in the end, bottom line, if somebody, a dissident, is arrested or something because of an iPhone security flaw, or a person of interest is kidnapped by a different state, or whatever it is, right? Whatever the scenario is. And it's all because there was an Apple security flaw and they used an iPhone. That's bad, mm-hmm, for Apple. Like, the Apple does not want that story to exist. So it's bad for Apple, bad for their customers. And Apple really, security is their brand, right? Privacy and security are their brands. They really don't want those scratched. And that, if that means building special features that almost nobody uses, but that day that the FBI comes to your house and says, you are a target, turn on lockdown mode, you'll be happy it's there. For our one listener who is being targeted.
Probably can't even listen to this podcast because it's so
Don't do
They're
it.
So secure.
I've don't embedded
do this
something.
Could be a, this could be a vector.
I've embedded a barcode in the MP3 art and yeah, something like that. All right. Well, next week promises to be pretty interesting, right? Because we'll have an we'll have a MacBook Air release next Friday, and hopefully reviews during the week. And we'll have you know, maybe some public beta. So we'll have a lot of stuff to talk about next week.
It's summer season. We're ready to go.
Busy, busy, busy. All right. Thanks to everybody out there for being Six Colors subscribers. We appreciate it. And until next time, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.